Scott and Rick.
I don't really have a lot to comment on.
Danny and Sunday have crashed. They've got into each other.
I wasn't listening.
No idea what you're speaking about.
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there. I'm Scott Hughes.
I'm Rick Horton.
And we are the two soft compounds off the back of the Turkish Grand Prix. And it was a pretty exciting race all in all. In the end, they had a bit of a nightmare by resurfacing the track. And I think they did it all a bit too close to the actual race itself. There's a few stories going around that they didn't know they were going to be having a race, and they kind of left it a bit late. But the other thing I didn't realise is how much it cost to resurface a racetrack, because they use a different kind of tarmac. And they reckon it was about $6 million to retrack that surface. And it's kind of $1 million per kilometre is like the rough way of working it out, which is astronomical money, isn't it? And I heard a few comments over the weekend where Hamilton was kind of saying, you know, maybe they would have been better just cleaning it rather than actually resurfacing it. But it did make a great Grand Prix. That's the one thing you can say, because it was incredibly, incredibly slippery all weekend. And of course, he finally did it. I think we all knew it was coming, but we weren't sure if he was going to do it this weekend. But seven-time world champion now, Lewis Hamilton, the most successful Formula One driver of all time, equaling Michael Schumacher in terms of championships, but of course, being more successful in terms of wins and poles and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I think Lewis Hamilton has people who don't particularly like him, but none of them can say that he doesn't deserve the seventh world title, I don't think. And, you know, people saying, oh, it's the car and not him, I think he proved that this weekend in Turkey. You know, he knocked it out of the park and drove the wheels off that thing from a poor starting position by his standards. And if you compare him to his teammate, you know, Bottas once again blaming a problem with the car after contact in the first lap. But, you know, he couldn't handle the situation, whereas Hamilton just did. And I think part of that is because he's an instinctive, brilliant racing driver. But also, I think there's a big mental game going on with Hamilton when he's behind the wheel. If you look at Max Verstappen's race, it was a race of frustration after the start where he failed to get off the line. And then he sort of went for that lunge trying to overtake Perez and lost it and spun the car. And I think that sort of thing doesn't happen to Hamilton because he doesn't panic and he doesn't get frustrated. He's very cool and collected behind the wheel. I think he proved some doubters wrong, Hamilton, I think, with this performance on Sunday. I think it was a brilliant drive. And let's not forget, you know, driving a Formula One car in dry conditions where you've got lots of downforce takes 150% commitment and focus behind the wheel of that car. To drive on a circuit with very low grip in the wet, you can times up by 200 the focus and the commitment. And it separates the men from the boys. And the fact that we didn't have a single safety car in Turkey just shows you the high standards of the entire field in Formula One. You know, we had people down the back, Grosjean, for instance, you know, who tripped over himself again. You know, you kind of expect that. But for the whole field to do what they did on Sunday, I thought was fairly amazing.
Yeah, a brilliant race, like you say. And, you know, for Hamilton to end up lapping Bottas in the same car is an enormous statement. And I think, you know, he's won a few of his Grand Prix where he hasn't even been on the podium when he's won the world title, which I think it must be a strange thing. And I think he really wanted to make a statement this weekend. It was kind of like, you know, the fact he didn't come in and change his tyres and stuff. It was very much him saying, listen, I'm about to equal the greatest of all time. I want to do this on my terms. I want to win this race. I want to show everybody what I can do. And, you know, there was a point in the race, I think he was sixth or seventh. I remember watching it and thinking, well, Hamilton's got no chance of winning this. So at least, you know, at least we can have an exciting winner. Who's that going to be? And that's how I was kind of thinking at the start of this race. And then next thing you know, like halfway through the race, I'm like, hang on a minute, Hamilton's properly back in this now. I don't even know how he's done that. But yeah, just an incredible drive, you know, an incredible champion. I'm not the world's biggest Hamilton fan. I've got a lot of respect for him, but you know, what he's achieved in that sport is just incredible. And the fact that, you know, he's likely to sign a new 3-year contract. Rumors are he wants $40 million a season. So he wants $120 million 3-year contract to kind of finalize his career with Mercedes. You know, he could in theory win another 3 world titles. That would take him up to 10, of course, which would be, you know, completely, I mean, someone will beat it one day, but in your head, you just think, how is that even possible for anybody to get near 10 world titles? You know, it's hard enough to win one these days. But yeah, I mean, it's just astronomical what that guy's done. And hats off to Hamilton. What a brilliant, amazing career. And I think it's going to continue.
Well, let's go back to the weekend in general. Qualifying, I think probably everyone would agree, the best qualifying session of the season this year, mainly because of the wet conditions, the fact that the qualifying session was delayed, red flags, and then basically with the time clicking down, people having to go out and really take risks to set a benchmark lap and to get a time on the board. And we saw that certain teams, I got the impression that Racing Point knew the weekend weather was going to be wet, and I think they set their car up for those conditions. I mean, we've heard in the past of dry and wet setup. You don't get it as much these days because there's no Parc Fermé, or there is Parc Fermé, I'm sorry, between qualifying and the race. In the old days, you know, if they had a dry qualifying and were told, oh, it's going to rain tomorrow, they'd completely rebuild the car overnight and set it up for a wet run. But they don't have that luxury anymore. I got the impression that Racing Point set their cars up for wet conditions on both the Saturday and the Sunday, which is why I think they performed so well and why they worked their tyres so well. Those intermediate tyres that they were using towards the end of qualifying really set them up well. And that's probably why that the Racing Point cars sort of faded out during the race, because, all right, Perez did a great job getting on the podium, but Stroll, for instance, he was fine when the conditions were really wet at the start of the race, and then as it started to dry, he really struggled on those tyres, the intermediates. He just couldn't fire them up properly. So qualifying, I thought, was really good. I thought there was obviously some surprises with Hamilton qualifying in six. Just couldn't turn the tyres on. The intermediate tyres for both the Mercedes and the Red Bull cars just weren't working. Full wets were working okay. The intermediates just weren't working on Saturday.
Yeah, it was kind of like that was the thing, wasn't it, where Hamilton was like, well, let me just stay on these intermediates until they go to slicks, and then they'll be warm enough as slicks that were intermediates to kind of get me to the end of the race. And that was the only way they could get heat into those tyres, wasn't it? It was absolutely bizarre. But again, you know, we laughed when Bernie Eccleston said we should have sprinklers around. But, you know, it just goes to show that a bit of rain, a bit of resurfacing of that track, you could visibly see the oils coming up through that track, making it so slippery. And, you know, everyone says, well, these are the best drivers in the world. If you've ever driven on a go-karting circuit on slick tyres outdoors when it's rained, it is literally an ice rink. And you can't, you know, I used to laugh and go, ah, how are these guys not driving? This is, you know, it's only a bit of rain. These are the best drivers in the world. Until I got in a go-kart on slicks on a wet track. And it is literally like on being on an ice rink. I've never known anything like it. You can brake, you can steer, you can accelerate, whatever you do, that kart was all over the shop. And obviously these cars are just massive versions of that, basically. So these guys, incredibly talented, but it, you know, like you say, made an amazing, amazing qualifying session, and it made an amazing race. I think you texted me the morning of the race and just said, look, this could literally go any way. Anyone can win this. And that's what you want, isn't it? At the start of a race, you want to be sat on your chair, excited, thinking, I have no idea what's coming over the next 2 hours. Anybody can win this race. Anything can happen. And I'm surprised, like you say, there was no more red flags or yellow, you know, more yellow flags, more safety cars. You know, I'm surprised that we just didn't really see much of that at all, did we? And I thought it was going to be a safety car almost every lap and a couple of red flags and all the order changing. But yeah, I mean, great race, but it kind of, I don't know, I felt, you know, the drivers were all complaining so much in practice and in qualifying. I thought, they're all struggling. They can't get their heads around this. But of course, then when you get into the race, they're all driving great and very smoothly, and it was all working okay. And it was an exciting race, but I think it could have been a lot more dramatic. There was loads of spins, of course. Verstappen and Bottas come to mind for spinning so many times. And, you know, when you just see these guys going into a corner and you see the onboard footage, and they just literally tiny turn of the wheel and the back goes and around they go. And it's, you know, it's so easily done at those speeds.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, the only dry running we had was on the Friday when they were slip sliding all over the place because of the resurfacing. And I mentioned it in last week's podcast. I said, you know, I wonder if they've resurfaced this track, because we saw what that did in Portimao in terms of grip. But in Portimao, they'd done it, you know, well in advance. Here, they did it 10 days before the race and had no other running on that circuit at all. Oh, excuse me, I just knocked my microphone over. But I think on Friday, when they were complaining, I was kind of like, oh, just man up, will you? This is what you get paid to do, you know. And it's the same for everyone. I think it was Max Verstappen who said, yeah, it's tricky. you know, I'm not really enjoying it, but it's the same for everyone. And some drivers were enjoying it. You know, I think there were some comments from a number of the drivers, Vettel included, who said, you know, I quite enjoy sliding round turn five and sticking the back end out and correcting it just at the right time. It's kind of stuff we don't normally do. And it's, you know, if you've got that in your skill set, then it's brilliant. And of course, most of the European drivers have, because like you were talking about karting, they've all karted in the wet. I mean, when I was racing in the British Pro Kart Championship, we are going back many, many years now, about 20 years, in fact, we used to do wet races all the time. And most of the time you'd have wet weather tyres. But occasionally, because your budget had run out or you just didn't have them with you that weekend, you would have to do it on slicks. And everyone did. They just got on with it. And that's where you learn to brake in a straight line. That's when you learn to not put the power on during the corner, to coast the corner and then put the power on when you've straightened it up again. You know, basic stuff that kids from the age of seven learn. And that's where these Formula One drivers, you know, all start out doing kart races in the wet, and that's how they learn those skills. But the concentration required in a 200-mile-an-hour Formula One car is just something else, especially when you're trying to make up places in a race and get to the front. I mean, it's just unbelievable. So I think for the casual fan watching on Sunday, they will have been, oh, okay, this is pretty good. I think for the aficionados of Formula One, like me, you, and lots of other fans, I thought it was just fascinating to see how they were coping with the conditions and the changing conditions as the race started to dry out.
Yeah, I think the other thing that fascinated me as well is that they've admittedly made some changes to the Red Bull for Albon. And whatever those changes are, they didn't really kind of go into too much depth about what they'd done, but they said they made the car more drivable for Albon. And he had a much, much better race this weekend. And at one point I thought, he's going to finish on, you know, particularly on the podium, maybe second here. He's doing really well. And I think he had a much better race. But then towards the end, it kind of went back to a little bit of the old Albon again. I really don't know if he's done enough to keep that drive. They're saying they're going to wait till the end of the season to kind of discuss it and make that decision. What's annoying for him is you've then got Perez putting his car on second place, and you think, well, Perez is kind of auditioning for that seat. Albon is desperately trying to keep hold of that seat. I like Albon. I think he's a good driver. He's done some good overtaking moves in the past, but it, for me, lacks that kind of ruthless aggression that you need to kind of be top level guy. He's not, you know, he's not like Verstappen is on the radio. Verstappen is very snappy, very aggressive on the radio. Jovial and jokey sometimes, but, you know, does it in a sarcastic way. You don't really get that with Albon. And I think he's lacking some kind of, you know, some kind of streak in him to make him as what he needs to be, really, as a driver to go up against Verstappen. For me, that seat's got to be Perez's for next year. You know, he's done everything he needs to do. Don't forget, he had two races where he was out with COVID as well, and he's still right up there in the points. It's a tough decision for Red Bull, but I think they've either got to stick with Albon, or they've either got to go with Perez and just go, listen, you know, this is not a long-term option, but we need a guy that can kind of hang with the points and stay out there with Verstappen and try and do better as a team. And maybe, you know, Sergio is our man for the next two or three seasons, possibly.
Yeah, I think Sergio Perez definitely needs to stay in Formula One. He was a McLaren driver too early in his career. He wasn't ready for it then, but he's now ready to be in a top car, and he can challenge for the lead of races. And the way he went about himself on Sunday, I just thought was brilliant. The way he managed his tyres, he decided, or the team decided, they were going to leave him on virtually the same strategy as Hamilton, who was going to wear those intermediate tyres down and go on a really long stint with them. He did that. There was no spins. There was no mistakes. Very cool and collected. You look at his teammate, Lance Stroll. You know, you would have to say the cars were probably both set up in a very similar fashion. Stroll, very cool, calm and collected at the lead of that race. I mean, I think 10 laps in, he had a pit stop worth of time ahead of Hamilton before it all changed. And when he came in for his next set of tyres, he just couldn't fire them up. And as the track was drying, he started struggling. Perez didn't. He managed to keep it on the tarmac. He managed to, you know, pull out gaps. It was a really good example of how mature he is now and how experienced he is and how he knows to handle a Formula One car, which would be an asset to any team on the grid.
Yeah, and talking of him going to McLaren too early, I always forget that Kevin Magnussen was in the McLaren far too early as well. And, you know, some of these drivers have been kind of promoted to these big teams, like you say, far too early in their career. For some drivers, it works out. You know, you get Hamilton who comes in and very nearly wins the world title in his first season. You get someone like Verstappen who gets in a top car and just blows everybody away. And then there's other drivers like your Perez, like your Magnussen. It's just all a little bit too early for them. And, you know, are we seeing that the same thing with Albon and Gasly, for example? Are they, you know, is it all too early for them and they're going to mature away? You know, Gasly could sort of sit there in that AlphaTauri level team now for 5 or 6 years and then be an immense driver in 5 or 6 years' time. Did it all just come far too early for him? And the same with Magnussen, the same with Sergio Perez. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, the difference between some of these drivers that just get straight in the car and become, you know, world-class drivers in the best car immediately, and then these other drivers that need a bit of time. And I wonder if that's the difference, you know. Is the difference between a multiple world champion like a Lewis or a potentially a Verstappen, somebody like that, is that the difference that they step into the car and they're just immediately brilliant? Whereas someone like Sergio is a brilliant number two driver, but maybe never going to be a world champion, you know, maybe just kind of a good points man and a good team man, a bit like a David Coulthard, you know, an Eddie Irvine, you know, those kind of drivers that are maybe lacking that final little thing that they need to just be that world-class number one.
Yeah, I think Perez has demonstrated that if he goes to Red Bull, I think he's going to give Max a run for his money. And there's a few reasons for that. I think probably Max is a more gifted natural talent than Perez, but Perez has the experience. I thought it was interesting that Hamilton said, you know, he was asked after the race, why did you overrule your team and not come in to change tyres when you had enough time to do it and there might have been rain coming? And he said, well, he said, I go back to what happened in 2007 at China, where the racetrack was virtually dry, but the pit lane entrance was wet and I skidded off and that was the end of my race. I thought, I'm not risking that. And if the rain comes, well, I'll deal with it. I think Perez is of a similar ilk in terms of experience. I'm not saying he's as gifted a driver as Hamilton, but in terms of experience and racecraft and all that stuff that he's gone through, I think he would bring a good fight to Max Verstappen at Red Bull, because Max is still quite young, still not as many races under his belt. And as we saw on Sunday, there was no need for him to make that lunge at turn 11 in Turkey. He could have backed off, waited till the end of that back straight and tried to go for an overtake into the final few corners of the lap. He didn't. He was impatient. He wanted to go for it. Now, someone like Hamilton or Perez, with their experience, would have probably done that. They'd have probably just gone, you know what, I don't need to get him on this corner, which is a really fast right-hand kink. I can wait till the end of the straight, or even wait till the lap afterwards. You know, just line him up, take my time, do it with precision. Whereas Max tends to be a little bit gung-ho, and I think that sort of thing comes with maturity and experience.
Yeah, Max does very much remind me of an early Hamilton, where, you know, he makes some questionable moves, but I think he gets very... He's just very, like you say, impatient, and he gets all het up, doesn't he, in the Grand Prix. And when I watched the onboard footage of him trying to make that move that you were just talking about just then, I was just wincing. Just, you know, you couldn't, he's doing whatever amount of speed they were doing. It was crazy speed. You could barely see in front of your hand, in front of your face. If you put your hand in front of your face, you wouldn't have been able to see it. You know, it was that spray ridden. And just like you say, a crazy lunge. But when I watched that onboard footage, I was literally tensed up and I was wincing as it was spinning around, just thinking, oh, he's going to hit something. You know, to not be hit by a car in that situation was just unbelievable, wasn't it? But that is something that will come. I think, you know, Verstappen for me is undoubtedly going to be a world champion one day, as is Charles Leclerc. And I think both of them have their moments. You know, Charles did the same thing at the very end of the race. He made a lungy move and it didn't pay off. And he ended up, you know, losing two places in the end. And I think they're both very similar. They both feel like they're ready to be world champions already. They've got a lot to prove. They need to make these crazy moves on track to show everyone how brilliant they are. And sometimes it works and sometimes they look like a hero. Other times it doesn't work and they go to zero. And, you know, I think they're both guilty of that. I don't know if you heard the radio of Charles Leclerc after the race. He was absolutely beating himself up again. And they said, you know, good race, Charles, well done. Fourth place. And he was like, no, don't tell me this. It was a horrific race. I'm beep, 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 and loads of beeps and all this. But he was saying, I'm stupid. I'm beep, stupid. And he was really going for it on the radio. And you could hear how angry he was. at that last minute lunge. And again, he went from second to fourth, didn't he? So, you know, he threw a lot of stuff away there in the race. So both of those guys have got it, but they've also got such immense racecraft and such immense speed that when they get a little bit older and they get that beautiful sweet spot that Lewis is sat in now of experience and age combined with amazing speed and racecraft, you know, that's when they win all their world titles. And I think, you know, someone like Christian Horner, you can see him sitting Max Verstappen down and saying, let's just calm down, chill out. It's, you know, just bide your time. It's going to happen. Just chill out. You know, and I think that's kind of what they need to hear. But at the same time, they're so young and het up that they don't want to hear that. They just want to get in the car and be world champion tomorrow, don't they?
We're going to have some post-race stats from Nicky in just a bit. First of all, though, Sebastian Vettel, lovely to see him back on the podium. I thought his gesture of going over to Hamilton in Parc Fermé when they finished the race was just... it was genuine, it was heartfelt, it was respectful. He said afterwards that he was made up to be on the same track as Hamilton when he won his seventh title. I think there's a lot of mutual respect between those two. We've seen some feisty battles on circuit. To see that at the end, it just made me, you know, love Vettel a little bit more. You know, the fact that he got driver of the day, you know, an impressive start to the race. He just held on to what he needed to do to get on that podium. And of course, the last lap shenanigans between Leclerc and Perez helped that. But, you know, he was just cool, calm, collected, as we've said, you know, mentally strong. And it was lovely to see that at the end of the race, I thought.
Yeah, and I saw a quote where he said that Michael Schumacher will always be the greatest for me, but you can't deny what Lewis has done is absolutely incredible. And it, like you say, it was a very nice kind of moment. And there's a lot of respect between those two. He went straight over to him, didn't he, and spoke to him in the car. And, you know, Lewis was very upset and emotional, and it was a nice emotional moment. But I think those two have become friends through respects, through what they've done on track. You know, they've gone from enemies to friends just purely because they're both brilliant, great racing drivers. You know, and Sergio Perez was on that podium with 11 world titles stood next to him. You know, 7 with Lewis and 4 with Vettel. It's just incredible that those two between them, you know, are so high up on that all-time greatest list, and 11 world titles between the two of them. It's incredible.
And quickly, Lando Norris, good race. And another thing that just blew me away, because you kind of forget when you've been watching these drivers for as long as we have, but the fact that he celebrated his 21st birthday at the weekend, I was like, my God, he's 21. And he's, you know, we know he likes a laugh and he's fun and everything else, but, you know, he always puts in a decent race performance if he's got the car set up in the right way and the tyres are all working as they should be. I thought he did a pretty damn good job on Sunday.
Yeah, he's another driver. Give him 7 or 8 years. Like you say, he'll still be under 30 and he'll have so much experience, and his racecraft will be beyond brilliant. And he's another one that could easily be a world champion in 5-10 years time.
All right, Nicky from At Lights Out is going to give us some post-race stats now from the Turkish Grand Prix. His blog is fascinating. I was looking at him live tweeting during the race and just some amazing statistics. Here's Nicky with all the details.
Hamilton becomes a 7-time champion, Stroll becomes a pole sitter, and Albon becomes a race leader. Here are the top stats from the 2020 Turkish Grand Prix weekend. Let's start with Saturday's qualifying, in which Lance Stroll became Formula One's 101st pole sitter. Stroll was the first Canadian to take pole since Jacques Villeneuve at the 1997 European Grand Prix. In that race, Villeneuve was crowned world champion. Stroll is the first driver to take pole who was born after the last Canadian champion was crowned. He becomes F1's 5th youngest pole sitter. Stroll was the first non-Mercedes, Ferrari or Red Bull driver to take pole position since Felipe Massa did so for Williams at the 2014 Austrian Grand Prix. But Stroll would have less luck in the race. He finished in 9th place, losing 8 positions from where he started, which is the most positions he's ever lost in a Grand Prix. It's the first time that the pole sitter has not finished on the podium in Turkey, and only the 9th time in World Championship history that the driver who started on pole has finished in 9th place. Strangely, 2 of those occasions have been in races where a driver was crowned world champion for a 7th time. Jan Ottrulli finished 9th, having started from pole at the 2004 Belgian Grand Prix. The 2020 Turkish Grand Prix is the first race to have a Canadian pole sitter and a British winner since the 1997 Australian Grand Prix, where Jacques Villeneuve was on pole and David Coulthard won. Lewis Hamilton's 94th career victory and his 10th win of the season secured him a record-equalling 7th title. His title win means that the 1999 European Grand Prix is now the last F1 race in which no eventual seven-time world champions competed. This weekend's race was the 53rd Formula One race to have five or more different lap leaders. Lance Stroll, Sergio Perez, Max Verstappen, Alex Albon and Lewis Hamilton all led at least one lap of the race, making it the first time since the 2016 Austrian Grand Prix that five different drivers have held the lead. Stroll and Albon became the 75th and 76th different drivers to have led a lap in Formula One. It's the second time this season, after the Italian Grand Prix, that two drivers have led a lap for the first time in the same race. It's only the 16th time that this has occurred in F1 history, and the first time that it's happened twice in a season since 1975. And finally, back to this year's champions. After the Turkish Grand Prix, Mercedes lead the Constructors' Championship by 264 points. That's the sixth largest lead ever held by a team. Lewis Hamilton leads the Drivers' Championship by 110 points, which is the 12th largest lead ever held by a driver. It's the largest championship lead that Hamilton has ever had. With both titles already decided and three races left, 2020 will be the first season since 2015 to feature three dead rubber races.
Nice one, Nicky. You can, of course, follow him, as Rick said, across the race weekends at Lights Out. It's where you can find him on Twitter. His blogs and stuff, just amazing. Some of the stats and facts he puts out over the race weekends are just brilliant. So we've got a week off this week, and then we're back for the Bahrain Grand Prix, first of two Bahrain Grand Prix, because they're using the inner circuit and the outer circuit, I believe. We'll obviously cover that in a bit more detail next week as we preview the Bahrain Grand Prix.
Yep, until then, have a great week. Join us again next week for more on Two Soft Compounds.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.